Did you know that protecting your brand could be the difference between your business succeeding or floundering? Imagine if you've built your brand up as your most valuable asset, and then trademark registration could be the key to safeguarding that asset. And there's a number of myths around the whole topic of trademarking and what is a trademark and what is a copyright. My guest this week, Andrei Minkoff, is the founder of Trademark Factory. He's an accomplished trademark attorney with a strong focus on intellectual property law and brand protection. We have quite a wide-ranging conversation around the whole topic of trademark copyright, and he provides some really interesting examples and stories and reasons why this is an area that you actually really need to focus on a whole lot more than I think most of us give it credit for. I think you're going to enjoy the conversation, and it will probably underline for you the importance of trademarking what it is you do. Enjoy the episode. Welcome to the Real Estate Investor Content Marketing Podcast, where we help you build a private following of investors to finance your next real estate investment project. We're here to show you how to create content that people can't ignore and that turns your real estate investing business into a standout success. In each episode, we'll explore the secrets of content marketing for real estate investors. We'll chat with smart people, give you useful tips, and share success stories from others who've mastered content marketing in their real estate investing businesses. We'll cover topics like writing articles, blog posts, ebooks, video, podcasts, email, marketing, online education, social media, graphics and images, and of course, AI. If it's content, we'll have the experts and the insights you'll need. Whether you're learning to tell compelling stories, figuring out social media, or growing your real estate investing business through content, you're in the right place. And now, on with the show.
Andrei, thank you for joining us. I think you are definitely the first guest I've had who's joining us from Dubai, which is quite amazing. And I appreciate that the audience should know that this is midnight for you. So that's quite the dedication. So we appreciate that. At trademarks, it's such a huge topic, but why should a real estate investor or somebody in real estate even worry about trademarks?
First, thanks for having me. Excited to be here. And to answer your question, not every real estate investor should worry about trademarks. I think really it boils down to whether you're trying to build a brand around what you're doing, whether you're trying to get known, whether you're trying to get some benefits of putting that content out, building the brand up. And if the answer to that is yes, then it's certainly worth protecting that, which is what you're building, as opposed to if all you do is, you know, you find a property, you flip the property, and you move on to the next property, then really all you got is your personal name, and there's really not that much of a brand to build or protect. And I'm not saying this with any arrogance, because this is actually a legitimate reason when you don't need a trademark when you don't have a brand, right? And in some situations, having a brand is valuable. In some situations, it's not. But one thing I want to say is that if you are spending a minute of your life or a dollar out of your pocket trying to build that brand, it makes perfect sense to make sure that you own the brand that you're trying to build.
Right. And you're talking both types of brand, aren't you? It could be a company brand, but it could be a personal brand, correct?
Yes.
Right. And when you talk personal brand, what are the kind of things that somebody has to think about, perhaps beyond what you would do for a company brand? Or is the trademarking kind of a similar process?
So, yeah. So since you're in Canada, it's where I spent many years in before, Canada is actually pretty tricky around trademarking personal names, just first name, last name. Not all of them can be trademarked. Many of them cannot. But usually what happens, if you could add something to that, I don't know, Bob Smith Real Estate, that would be trademarked. And so the question is, again, what is it that you're building? Does the business stop with the one person running it, right? And usually we go into the situations when it starts with one guy or one gal, and then becomes a team, and then becomes a bigger team, and then the reason people show up and buy from, you know, and buy or sell to them is because of the reputation that they've built, whether it's the name of the guy who started it or whether it's the name of the team that's separate from the name of the guy. It's how you build it. And it's more of a branding advice than legal advice, really. And it's just, and not that there's anything wrong with that, but the big question that I always ask is that, is there a business when the owner is no longer a part of it?
Okay. So like legacy of some sort or selling the business.
Selling or no longer wanting to personally go and shake hands and, you know, and work.
Right. And are there, I'm just trying to think, you know, somebody like a Tony Robbins or a Robert Kiyosaki with Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I mean, I could see trademarking Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And are there any challenges around trademarking Robert Kiyosaki for when he's not involved in the business and maybe he's even passed away? Are there, does that then raise problems or is it a continuation?
Well, first of all, he trademarked quite a bit of his stuff and he learned it the hard way when, I don't know if you know the story. So he was the guy behind those Velcro wallets when they were just starting out.
Okay.
And he didn't protect them at all. And very quickly got knocked off and he lost a lot of money in this. And that's when he said to himself that basically that's when he learned the importance of protecting one's IP. Right. And so when he launched the cash flow game, he found a proper lawyer and they trademarked that and they patented it. Like basically they did whatever they could to protect that. And then the Rich Dad Poor Dad and his cash flow quadrant, all of those assets that we know him as. He got those protected. And by the way, the cash flow quadrant is another great example of creative use of trademarks because he couldn't protect the idea behind, what is it, employee, small business owner, business, and investor, right? ESBI. So he knew he couldn't protect the idea behind it, but when placed as a chart, that could be protected as a graphic, as a design mark. So he owns that now. So when he's no longer part of the business, he's been preparing the world for that for a long time because most of his events, he's not there.
Right.
Right. It's his team who educates people. It's his team who tries to educate people on the importance of real estate investment and all that stuff. I remember because I went to a few of those events expecting him to be there and he wasn't. Right. And a few years later, we actually shared a stage with Robert at some events. And I asked him, and he's like, well, it's very much intentional because I don't want the world to always expect me to be there. I'm building a brand. I'm building a business. And it doesn't mean that I always have to be showing up everywhere.
Right. Yeah. And I think Tony Robbins does the same because, I mean, there's Tony Robbins coaches everywhere. They all deliver the Tony Robbins methodology, but he's not in the room.
Yep.
And so for clarification, because I'm sure it's going on in people's heads, what's the difference between trademark and copyright? Because it's two very different things, isn't it?
Yes. So I'm trying to figure out how to best explain this. I mean, let me do it the way I explained it in my book. So because there I give one, what I call magic word for each type of intellectual property to make it easy for people to remember and understand. Okay. So the magic word that I use for copyright is how, because what copyright protects is the way you express certain ideas. If you write a book, right, the copyright wouldn't protect the topic of the book or the ideas expressed in the book. It's how you express them, how you write, right? Or songs, right? If you write a song about how a guy meets a girl and, you know, the girl leaves the guy and the guy is unhappy, right? Million songs like this. But it's how you put the melody to the rhythm, how you sing it. That's what copyright protects. Or videos or images or software or things like that. So that's what copyright protects, content primarily. And content from the perspective of how you made it available to the public. Trademarks, the magic word is which. Because what trademarks protect is the brand that allows consumers to tell one product of one company from identical product of someone else. So when you go to a supermarket and see a bunch of toothpaste,
right,
the way you tell one from the other is the brand, the names that you see on the packaging. Same with ketchup, right? That's the proper function of a trademark, is to distinguish one from the other, the which, right? If you talk about patents, the magic word is what? Because patents are as close as you're going to get to protecting the underlying idea.
Okay.
Right? That spark of genius. They protect the invention, the new, non-obvious, and useful inventions, new products or new methods of making those products, right? So that Velcro wallet could have been protected by a patent, which Rob didn't do. And we have design patents, which, or in Canada, they're called industrial designs. The magic word for those is wow, because they're all about aesthetics, right? It could be a pattern on a Gucci bag, or it could be a certain shape of the product, like those lemon plastic containers that you could see lemon juice being sold in. But they don't have to look like lemon. They don't have to have a shape of a lemon, right? You could pour the same juice into anything else, right? But you being able to place it in that, and it gives you an advantage. That can be protected by design patent. The fifth one is trade secrets, or know-how. The magic word for those is hush, because the only value of that know-how is there for as long as that information remains a secret. Okay. The second someone figures it out, like if someone figures out the recipe of Coca-Cola, right, that they have it in this vault, and like they have the whole story around how Coca-Cola's recipe is, you know, in the vault, and there's three people who have different parts of the, right? If someone figures out the exact recipe of Coca-Cola, if they can reverse engineer, that's it. They don't have any ownership of that secret anymore, because it's public information. Right.
Okay.
And when you sign an NDA, or someone signs an NDA, and you disclose some information to them, really all you got is a contract. So if they violate this contract and post on YouTube everything you just told them, you can go after them, right? If they have any money, but you can't put that toothpaste back into the tube.
Right.
Once it's out there, it's out there. So that's the trade secrets. And the last one, which a lot of people leave out of the equation, contracts, all the license agreements, all the assignment agreements that you sign. And for those, the magic word is whatever, because contracts can be much stronger than any of those other things. You can own your copyright, but if you sign an agreement that says you give someone an exclusive license to use it and agree not to use it yourself.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter that you're the author. It doesn't matter that you're the first owner of copyright. Now they can use it and you can't, right? And those situations happen very often. Like I had a career as a copyright lawyer back in Russia, where I'm from originally, before I moved to Canada, right? And every time, like I'd have those people like, you know what? I signed this agreement, I don't like it, but hey, I'm like, the law says that I'm the author, so let's prevent them from me. Like, dude, you signed the agreement. That's it.
Really?
Right? Yeah. And this happens all the time. It's not the, you know, just crazy Russians who don't understand. It happens everywhere, because people sign stuff without reading it. Nobody reads this stuff, really, right? You kind of glance through it. And if you really want that publisher to put your book out there, you usually sign without reading. And then when you become big and famous and you go back and try to read what you signed, usually you find a lot of things that you didn't expect were there.
Wow. Okay. So if a real estate investor had a training program that they'd written, mm-hmm. and then they signed a contract with some people to go deliver that training, that potentially could mean they don't own that.
I'll tell you a story. So a couple of years ago, I had an offer from a big platform, for a big growing platform. They were trying to become big in the educational space, infobiz space. And they promised to bring really good cinematography to shooting the course that I could teach. And we were discussing a lot of things. It was great. Like, I would go somewhere, we'd shoot there, you know, I'd have everything scripted. I was ready. And then they sent the agreement. And I have this training. I can't just sign the stuff without reading. So I actually read it. And based on the wording of that, I wouldn't be able to pretty much, I would have to shut down my YouTube channel, because the way they phrased it was that I wasn't allowed to teach something similar. Okay. And I'm like, this is my text. The stuff that I always say is the same thing. I don't want to be in violation with the contract that I signed, which let's modify the wording. And these guys were so stubborn that they're like, no, that's the only way we're going to do it. I said, okay, great. I'm not going to do it. So we didn't. But like, I can see that, like, I saw that there would have been a problem, right? Because I'm a public person. I do interviews like this, and I probably, you know, repeat certain things more than once. So if I would include this in my course that they shoot, what, I'm not allowed to say that anymore? No, of course not. So.
Wow. Yeah. And that, yeah, I could just see that. Yeah. But presenting huge issues because. Yeah. Okay.
I'm like, wow. You can have a license. You can have the full exclusive right to the course, but yeah. I should be able to safely continue doing what I do and right. share the knowledge. And they're like, no, like, this doesn't look fair to me. So if you're actually so serious about this clause, it means that you have bad intentions. I'm not going to sign it. That was my answer to them. And that's really where we ended it.
But you're right as well. How many times do we, particularly on the web, you know, you have a thing and it says, you know, do you agree to the terms and conditions? And we all just scroll to the bottom and say yes. But there could be stuff in there that we have no idea what we're agreeing to.
That's an exercise in speed reading.
Okay. Very true. So when you're trademarking, so if somebody's delivering, like a real estate investor, they've got a program that they're delivering in Canada. Should they be thinking about trademarking it outside of Canada, even if their initial plans are not to take it outside of the country? Or?
Good question. So trademarks are, as you say, done on a per country basis. A trademark in Canada does not protect you in the States. Trademark in Canada does not protect you in Europe. So we have four rules of thumb in terms of how to approach this. One, you always start with your home country, right? And when I say home country is, doesn't mean where you're born, doesn't mean where it's your citizenship, means where the business is, where the headquarters of the business are. Second, is you look at all the countries where you expect to make a lot of money from.
Okay.
Right. To me, the number is around 30K in revenue per year. Not a huge amount, but it's noticeable enough, right? So if you're in Canada, if you plan to make 30K from Americans, probably a good idea to trademark your brand there as well. Okay. Because if you don't, you're going to have a problem potentially having to run two different brands, one in Canada, one in the US, if someone else owns it, right? And for small businesses, it's very difficult to be able to promote two separate brands for the same thing. But the third one is if you have expenses in a specific country, like if you have a second office, second branch, or if you're running paid ads, like if you're specifically targeting a different country, again, probably 5K a year is a good number. If you're spending more than 5K a year in a specific country, like if you're in Canada, but you, for whatever reason, target Australia, make sure to protect your brand there. And last, which probably is not really then applicable to real estate investors, but if you're making physical stuff and you're making it overseas, make sure to trademark it there, because the fact of exporting your product out of that country constitutes use of your trademark there. So if someone else trademarks your brand there, they can prevent the containers with your stuff from leaving that country. Even if you're not planning to sell a single item, I don't know, in China, right? You have a Chinese factory, you make your stuff there, they put this in a container. If someone else trademarks it, they can prevent that container from leaving China, because that would be trade. You'd be infringing on their trademark.
So I'm just thinking of it, an instance where this may apply. So I get a bunch of promotional material made in China, like sweaters, hats, everything with my trademark on. Is that a situation where that potentially could be?
It could be.
Whoa.
It could be. Again, right, you have to decide how big of a loss it would be if your shipment got stopped. And if it's noticeable, probably a good idea to take care of that sooner rather than later. Like we had a situation with a client. He was making e-bikes there. Mm-hmm. But that was a really painful situation, because imagine you're somewhere in the U.S. You pay someone to make your bikes. They made your bikes. They put them in the container. They said, okay, your container is scheduled to leave China on this day. And just before that happens, you get a letter from some Chinese lawyers who tell you that, whoops, we have triggered this section of this law that allows us to arrest the container with the bikes that are marked with our trademark. And what are you going to do? Like, this is a situation that has no good solutions. Do you just say, okay, keep the bikes? Like, you're going to lose a ton of money. Do you say, open the container, remove the brand, let's put something else in it? You're still going to lose a lot of money and you still have to deal with them somehow. Or do you go back to them and say, let me pay you a little bit of money so that, you know, you go away, which is why they do
which
that.
Is why they've probably done it in the first place. Right.
Right. But it's a situation where that has good options in the present. The only good option was in the past when you could have filed that trademark first. So,
okay. And how do you go about trademarking? I know that you have a company that does that, and you can tell us a little bit about that, because it's quite a unique kind of process and service that you offer.
So. Yeah. So I'm going to talk about Trademark Factory because that's what I do. And I strongly believe that there is no better offer in the market. So that's really, if you're serious about protecting your brand, Trademark Factory is the way to do it. So you could go to trademarkfactory.com and you'd request a free call with one of our strategy advisors. And they'll help you answer all your questions and help you figure out what to start with. Because the crazy thing with trademarks is that, you know, if you have an unlimited budget, which I know nobody has, and assuming that everything is trademarkable, there's almost an infinite amount of stuff you could be trademarking. And you don't need to do all that because, you know, you're in the business to make money, not to just have a stack of trademarks. So that's what you can get in that conversation. They'll be able to direct you and actually tell you, hey, you don't need a trademark maybe, or you do need this now, this later. And once you're a client, the first thing we'll do, and really the first thing that should be done, is to do a comprehensive trademark search to confirm that the brand is even available.
Okay.
Because unlike the main names, like, and that's another big misconception that a lot of people have, trademarks are very different from domain names. The main name is what? You go, you check. If it's taken, you make a few tiny changes. And it tells you, oh, it's available now. You're like, great. Here's my $8.99. Give me my domain name. Trademarks are just like that, except not. With trademarks, it takes significantly longer. It's about a year and a half in the U.S., about 4 years in Canada now as a process. They're still blaming COVID. I'm not kidding. It's about a year in Europe. And the first thing you want to do is confirm that it's even doable, because trademarks are not just about identical matches. They look at look-alikes, sound-alikes, mean-alikes, synonyms, translations into different languages. So in Canada, if you file a trademark in English, if there is a prior trademark that says the same thing in French, they'll refuse your trademark.
Okay.
Wow. And that's a pretty difficult thing to track, because you can translate the same word many different ways, right? And so you have to try to figure out how else could they have called it in French, for example, so that this would trigger a rejection of ours. So we do the comprehensive search, and if everything is good to go, then we'll file your trademark to licensed practitioners, and we'll take it every step of the way. If there are any refusals, we'll take care of them, and client pays nothing additional. The way I put it is that Trademark Factory is the only firm out there that offers trademark registration services with a guaranteed result for a guaranteed budget. Right. So you know exactly how much the whole thing is going to cost. If there are any problems in the middle, there are problems, not yours. And we're going to solve them until they're resolved. And if we can get you the result that you're paying for, you get all your money back. Again, when was the last time you got a refund from a law firm?
Wow.
That's really but the search is probably the most important part of our secret sauce, because we got a 99.3% rate of success. The industry average is around 51.7.
Whoa. Why so low?
Because we tell clients that their trademarks are not trademarkable. Because our model puts us in the exact same seat as the client, because with us, our interests are fully aligned. What the client wants is their trademark to go through as quickly and as painlessly as possible. And the same thing with us, because we have a flat fee. So if your trademark goes through flawlessly, we have a really good margin on that process. The more complicated it becomes, the smaller and smaller a margin becomes until it becomes a loss to us. And we had a client who had been playing with his trademark for 7 years. Seven freaking years. We were writing back and forth between the client and the trademark office. 7 years. And in the end of the day, you know, we got him his trademark. We lost a lot of money on him, but, you know, made up for a great testimonial. But that's the problem. You know, the problem with trademarks is not that they're expensive or problematic, is that they're unpredictably expensive or problematic. Mm-hmm. And so what I wanted to do with Trademark Factory is to remove that risk from clients, from brand owners, who really have more important things to do than try to figure out how to respond to an office action from the trademarks office. Right? They want to build the business and they want someone else to take care of their brand. That's what we do.
And so your strategy consultants are kind of part legal, part marketing. Would that be?
So strategy advisors, they're not lawyers. They're not legal, really.
Right.
They are, you can call them salespeople, and they are in a certain degree. But their goal is not necessarily to sell you something. Their goal is for you to have clarity about where to start with, what to do. And they're not going to answer specific legal questions because they're not authorized to do that. They're not really qualified. But the way we position this is that it's very simple. Like, let's pretend you're a client, right? Let's pretend you're calling in. And my question to you would be, look, Paul, assuming your brand is trademarkable, assuming we can get this done for you, are you interested in getting a trademark for this amount of money?
Right.
And if your answer is yes, they say, great. So let's get you started, because if it's not trademarkable, the first thing that we're going to do is the legal team is going to look and assess whether it's trademarkable. And if it's not trademarkable, you can get all your money back. No questions asked. Right. And if it is trademarkable, then we're going to do it for you. And if we fail to give you the result, you again get all your money back. But it's a no-brainer of an offer. And they don't need to really be specialists in trademark law to be able to have this conversation. Right. So, you know, one of the first things they would say on the call, if you start asking them, you know, very specific questions, like, I'm not an attorney, I don't know, you know, based on, you know, what I've heard, you know, this is probably, but don't quote me on that. That's what we train them to say, because again, they're not there to give you legal advice. Right. They're there to understand your situation. They're there to see if there is a proper business case for you to own in the brand. Is there a brand, right? Because we have people who call in and say, you know, I wrote a book. Can I trademark my book? No, that's copyright, right? I have this amazing process of, you know, helping people become, you know, more energetic in the morning. Like, well, we had all sorts of people call us, you know.
Right.
Like,
I'm sure
you can't trademark that unless you have a name for that process, but you'd only be protecting the name. And she's like, no, you know, this is, you don't understand. This process is so good, it's so amazing and great, but it's not something you trademark. So this conversation they can have, right, and kind of position you in the right direction.
What's the difference between the letters that you see after a symbol or something where it says TM and then the other one is R. Is that right?
R
is
the
same. Is that the same thing? Or is that?
No.
Oh,
no, very
good. Okay.
So R in a circle means you have a registered trademark. It's actually fully gone through the process. The government said yes, and it's still active registration on in the country where you're selling those products, which, by the way, is tricky. For example, if you have a registration in Canada and you export your products in the US and you don't have a US trademark registration, then even if you have a registration in Canada, you can't bring those products that have an R in a circle because that's considered fraud on consumers in the US.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
The rules are not as strict in Canada for with those R in a circle, but US is, they're very strict because they say, look, you're telling our customers that you have a registered trademark and you don't. And your trademark in Canada is irrelevant in the US, right? So TM could mean all sorts of things. TM could mean you never applied for a trademark. You just put TM because you want this, the world to think that's your brand.
Okay.
Right? That's illegal. I mean, there's nothing illegal about that. You can put TM next to anything. You can put TM next to your name. You can put TM next to your taglines, next to your logos. Like you can put TM next to every single word in your website and you not be breaking any laws. TM could mean you file for a trademark and it's still pending.
Okay.
It could mean you file for a trademark and it got rejected. And you could still have that TM. Or you can even have a TM that got registered, like Google, for example. If you look closely, they typically put a TM rather than R in a circle because they always change their logos. And they don't want to run into the issue with multiple countries. So for whatever reason, Google just puts a TM. But Google has been pretty funny with how they treat their brand because initially they kept encouraging people to say, well, let me Google this when you use the brand as a verb. And they actually had a case in the Supreme Court of the U.S. when someone said, the name is generic. It's not a brand anymore. So someone tried to kill their trademark and they barely made it. They barely won. But if it keeps going this way, they'll probably lose it eventually.
Wow. So this is like Kleenex as well. It's or Hoover.
Kleenex.
Right.
Xerox.
Xerox.
Did you know that linoleum was a trademark?
No.
It used to be a trademark, or escalator used to be a trademark. And now it's just a generic term and anyone can use it.
And is that because there's a time limit on trademarks or is it they just...
Because they got so big and because they allowed the market to use the brand as a generic term. So they just said, that's an escalator rather than, that's a mechanical stairs. Or whatever, old escalator, that's the escalator mechanical stairs, and it's a pretty interesting thing. Kerosene was another one.
Wow. Okay. So we probably couldn't finish our conversation without talking about AI.
Yep.
So I would imagine this has opened up a whole new area of conversations that you're having with clients or with prospective clients. What's your take on it? What are the things that people should start to be at least aware of or be cautious with?
So I'm the guy who thinks that we're not going to have a war between humans and robots and that AI is going to, destroy humanity. But we're definitely going to have a serious competition between people who use AI and people who don't. And people who do will win. Because it's an amazing tool. There's a lot of value, especially if you know how to use it and what to get out of it,
right?
And I don't think AI is going to replace humans on the trademarking front anytime soon, but it's definitely making the job of people who understand trademarks significantly easier. Like all the trademark searches, all the, some of the drafting elements, AI makes them better. The problem with AI is when it's used by people who have no idea what they're doing.
Right.
Because remember I mentioned the importance of a trademark search, right? So there are a few websites that have those different engines of AI behind them. And oftentimes you run a search and it tells you, that the road is clear. Like my favorite one is, you know, micro-soft software solutions as a phrase. And really, this is the way I test those systems. If it tells me that, yeah, you know, no problem, let's go and file it, I'm like, okay, great. Right? But the bigger problem is, of course, that, you know, people are not going to test it on the obviously non-trademarkable brands. They're going to use theirs. And, but if the AI is so unsophisticated that it just tells you, yeah, it's good to go, when it's not, you're going to have a problem. So right. You always want to have some, because when we do trademark searches, we look at so many different variations. We run the test this way and that way. And when we were picking the software to run the searches on our end and paying a lot of money for it, we tested several different systems. And what we did is we picked a few test brands that we knew this is what we want to see in the results. And we ran the same test here and here. And one of them looked amazing. Like it was had the best interface. It looked so good. It looked like it could save us hours and hours. Problem is, it gave us half the results. Right. Right. And you can't make good decisions with half results because you can't trust the system. Right. The other one was got awful ugly and just gave too many results that we couldn't do anything with. Because again, you can't process like tens of thousands of entries. Like it's just stupid. And we found one that gives just enough for us to be able to make good decisions. And that's how we get the 99.3% rate of success.
But
you need someone who understands how to run those systems
right.
to make those decisions.
So AI is almost for people that are, it's almost replacing the domain search, because you're right. That's what people used to do. They just pump in their wanted trademark as a www.com. And if it's there, yeah, great. We can go with it. And okay. So you're only as good as what you're putting into the tools is what.
You know, I'm a drummer. Like, you know, one of my big hobbies is playing the drums. And I remember, I will never forget this, the embarrassment around this. I went to my very first drum camp in Cleveland, Ohio, 10 years ago. I don't remember exactly. And so they had those drum kits on the stage, and they were not the high-end drums that I would expect there to be. Oh, like, I would think that, you know, all those big names who are going to teach us would have those massive kits with the exact, you know, the huge amount of toms and cymbals. And it was nothing special. And I heard a bunch of students play them and they sounded horrible. And then a couple of my, you know, drummers that I was a fan of sat on the same drum kit, and the sound they produced out of that kit was just out of this world. And I sat there because I remembered going to the organizer and bitching about, hey, why is the kit, you know, this and not that? He's like, well, you know, that's what we normally use. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to try and see if I can, you know, make it sound good. And then I heard the guy play and I was like, oh, dog, dog, you know, and that's the same thing. You know, the drum kit is the tool. If you know how to play it, you're gonna make it sound good. If you don't, everything's gonna sound like a mess. So
same with AI prompts, right? I get it. So Andre, a fascinating discussion. How can people find out more about you and obviously your company?
Two paths. One is if you know you have a brand that you want to protect, go to trademarkfactory.com and find that big button that says request a free call with a strategy advisor. The second path is if you just want to learn more about trademarks, we have a YouTube channel with almost 1,000 videos that I posted. Go to YouTube, search Trademark Factory. And like, if there is a question about trademarks, I'll probably answer it more than twice there.
Okay. Wonderful. We'll make sure that is all in the show notes. And thank you for today, and have yourself a brandtastic tomorrow, I guess, because you're
on to midnight. Today.
It's already today.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
Thank you.